And then after the marathon, I think because I felt unwell on the race day.
Okay, yeah.
I was like, I hate it. And also I lost so many toenails, which nobody tells you about.
No, I've lost 4 toenails this year.
Yeah, so did I.
My big toes.
Okay, I didn't lose my big toes.
My 2 big toes.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, they came off. They came off in a club on holiday. It was really bad. We walked outside, me and Mo walked outside and we looked down and I was missing a whole toenail.
Welcome back to another episode of Girls Know Nothing. Today's guest is a YouTube sensation that posts videos about fashion, beauty, and lifestyle. Misha Grimes' online success started after she won the title of Miss Teen Galaxy England, and she later went on to win the international title of Miss Teen Galaxy in 2017. Misha has recently discovered a passion for running while fundraising for the M&D Association, having completed 2 marathons. So welcome to the studio, Misha. I do know what I was thinking when I was writing all these questions earlier. I was like, we have known each other for ages.
No, because how many years will it actually be? Because in my head, pageants were like 3 years ago. Actually,
no,
they were like,
not.
I finished when I was 18 or 19.
2017 was when you won your last title.
Yeah. Well, you know the facts about that, don't you?
And I think, when did you start competing?
So I started competing when I was 13.
And
I'm now 24.
Oh, okay.
So I think I was on the scene before you were.
Yeah, I think you were.
Because what was your first?
Teen Galaxy England, but like 2013.
Who won your year? That's how I'll know.
Oh my God. Shauna
Millen?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, then you're before me. She was a queen before my time.
And
lovely girl though, love her.
I think I've got pictures of baby Misha and... I was going to say grown up me, but I don't look like a grown up.
Yeah, no.
In these pictures.
Well, none of us did.
Oh, but what was the reason that you started competing in pageants?
I was the really extra kid that wanted to do something. And I remember I literally Googled and came across the Miss Teen Great Britain website and then like applied and didn't tell. I think me and my mum did it. And then we like didn't tell my sister and my dad. And then I got accepted and we were like, so dad, sis, I'm doing this. And they're like, I'm not even surprised. Like, I think it was just normal for me to just want to be the center of attention. Let's be frank.
Do you know what, actually, Teen GB was your first one?
It was my
I
first.
Remember watching it because you made your own fashion wear.
Yes.
The pink high-low dress with like the really big skirt and the like corset. Was that your first one?
No, that was my second.
Okay.
Third? I can't remember. They've all blurred into one now. But the first year I did compete, I also did make my fashion wear.
I remember watching that one as well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Baby Misha. What would you say, like, your biggest lesson that you've learned from doing pageants? Because I feel like people don't really believe that it's a thing or, like, believe that you can get something good out of it because it's really catty.
Yeah. I think... it's a bit like, I suppose, the influence industry. Everyone sees it as like, everyone's bitchy and stuff like that. But like, I put one of my best friends out of it. And this is like 7 years down the line. My dad wasn't like not pro pageants, but he was thinking, oh my God, they're spending all this money on something. Like, what is she actually getting out of it? And then in the end, I remember him saying to me, like, I can see why you did it. Like, yeah. I can see the person it's helped you become. I can see the confidence that it's given you. And I feel like whenever you hear people talking about pageants, they're like, oh, it makes you so confident. And you're like, how is it making you confident? Like strutting around being in competition with other girls. But I suppose you could say that about every industry in life. Like people you work with are technically your competition, but it's like, you don't sit there at your desk constantly thinking like that person's in competition with me. And I feel like growing up in that environment, A, it made me care so much less what people thought about me because I was the weirdo girl at school that did pageants. Like, people at my school did not get it. Like, I feel like they're slightly more normal now. Like, people don't roll their eyes so much when you talk about it. But in my heyday, like, I was literally the weirdo at school. So I feel like it forced me to be okay with people thinking that I'm strange and that I'm doing things that are different, which, you know, has worked out in the end. And I think it's just made me much better at like public speaking, doing interviews. People often ask me like, how are you confident in front of the camera or just like speaking in front of people? And I do take it back to the pageant days because it was so, I was so young at the time. If I think about like 13-year-old me, I'm like, that's crazy. And at the time I was competing against 18-year-olds. Yeah. But like, I wasn't scared of it. Like, I just loved it. So I didn't see it as like, oh my God, these 18-year-olds, like they're so grown up and I'm so not. Like, I just threw myself into it and it seems to have worked out.
I think society always teaches women that they have to compete against each other anyway.
Rather than you're just competing against yourself. And that is how I always saw it. I always said like, if I don't win, that's fine. Don't get me wrong. There were times where that was a much harder pill to swallow. We've all been there. We've all cried ourselves to sleep. When then like you look back at it years down the line and you're like, that's so wild that I cried myself to sleep over a crown. But we also know it's so much more than that.
Yeah. And I think that in one of those in pageants and in like that environment, when you are like thinking about your competition, you're not just thinking about like, oh, it's not for like the attention of a man or like because you want to be prettier than the other girl. It's like, well, this girl's doing this stuff, like this version of charity work. She's like doing this to prepare for interview.
Yeah.
Okay, if I want to beat her, then like I need to do that as well.
I need to be a well-rounded person.
So you're not like, when they say girls are competing against each other, it's really not.
It's not based on how many ab one person has in comparison to another.
I would never win otherwise. If it was literally all of that. Like, I always say, I don't always think, like, when I won my title, I don't think the prettiest girl on the stage.
But I think you're never going to think that. And I also say, if people go off the description of, like, the prettiest girl is going to win, then if I won after 3 years, I should have won the first year if you're going off the prettiest girl, because then surely I was still the prettiest girl 3 years ago. But we know that it's nothing to do with that.
You were on the judging panel of my competition.
Was I actually?
Yeah, I look back on the videos and your head is slap bang in the middle of the video.
With the big old crown. Yeah.
So, but, you know, your last pageant, you were Miss Teen Galaxy England.
Yeah.
And then you went to win the international title. Yeah. And, you know, in the UK, Galaxy is like the it girl of the pageant, pageant world. Why were you like, because I remember you consistently going back because you really, really wanted this title. Yeah. What was it about the title that you like attracted you to keep going back and going for it?
It's funny because when I first did Teen GB, I never got any of the Galaxy girls. I was like, I don't get it. Like, why do they want to go to an international? Why don't they just want to win money? Like, that's how, that is literally how like 13-year-old me saw it. And then I got more involved in it and I realized that the most fun part was actually the competing. The actual bit that, you know, brought the most joy and was the most enjoyable was the weekend of the competition and the time leading up to it, rather than, you know, just that final day when someone's crowned. So I feel like that's kind of how I then like veered into Galaxy, because I was like, okay, well, I love this and I want to be able to do it again. So if I win in the UK, I then get to go to the international. And like, you see it when you're younger as like, it's a trip to Orlando. Like, there's so much more to it. And especially with my year, there were three teens. So it's like, there was a whole group of us. Like, you build so many relationships. And I think that also appealed to me, that it wasn't just like, you win and then you're on your own. It was more of like a group community. Then you'll go into nationals. It kind of made it feel like there was more than just the one win.
So when you do win after you hand over, did you get that weird feeling? It's like, okay, well, what do I do now?
I don't think I did, because I already kind of knew that social media was where I was, you know, heading down. So I think I was almost ready to be able to just focus on that. Cause like, I'm very much someone that like, I need to put my all into something that I'm doing. So I think I was ready to close that chapter and like focus on this, which has now been, what if I finished when I was like 19, it's now been like 5 years, which is crazy because it feels like a lifetime ago. Yeah. And it feels like yesterday, all in the same sentence.
Yeah, because I think people have very mixed reviews when they just stop. So like, I think the first time I stopped, because I've gone through like periods, I felt really lost, because you've spent so much of your life.
I get you.
Thinking, what's the next one after? But I guess like, you know, you kind of had an overlap, didn't you, with starting your social media career. So how can, like, that kind of went hand in hand, I think, wasn't it? Didn't you start training for your interviews and then started YouTube at the same time?
So I posted my first YouTube video when I was 17, and it was because me and Molly had always said about wanting to do them, and she did it. So I was like, oh God, now I've actually got to do it. And it was that whole thing of like, your friend does it, so you're less scared to do it yourself. And yeah, so that was just before my 18th birthday. And just after my 18th birthday was when I competed in Miss Teen Galaxy England the year that I won. So I do think they went hand in hand. I also do thank pageants for some of the reason people were actually interested in me in the beginning, because for first, I could post the link to my YouTube video on my Facebook page and all the pageant girls would watch it. That's a community that I wouldn't have had otherwise and viewers that I wouldn't have had. And then I even think down the line, like, people find it really interesting. So all of those old pageant videos have so many views now because people are fascinated down the line. So like, I still get people messaging me all the time being like, I saw your videos years ago. And like, that's why I did Galaxy. That's why I did Miss Teen GB. So they did kind of go hand in hand. But then I feel like the social media took over. And also it's one of those things that the social media was making money, whereas the pageant was spending money.
Oh yeah.
So like, at the end of the day, like, you've got to make a choice at some point. And I think I also got to the stage where it was like, the money that I could be spending on that, I could be putting into something else to do with social media. It could be a new camera. It could be, so like, my priorities changed, but I also think that was healthy too, because it did take over my life for a period of time. And it was that time where like, I didn't win and I really wanted to, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm glad that I kind of like got past that space, because otherwise it would have been a very toxic space to stay in for like the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think it's really good and healthy to know when things, like, you're kind of done with that chapter of your life and ready to move on, because we all know there's certain people that are like, if they didn't have it, it would be really, really tough for them to like, to be able to do anything else.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, do you ever look back on that content and think, maybe I'll do another one at some point?
If the world was a simpler place, probably, but I know that it's not.
Yeah.
And I think there's so many layers for me now at the thought of competing. Like, back then it was so simple. It was like, I wanted to do it, so I did it. Whereas like, there's a lot more responsibilities as you get older. And I don't want to do it, but I don't want to do it in the same breath. It's really weird. Like, don't get me wrong, whenever I go and like watch a competition, like, it's like a little part of me is like unlocked that's been like, you know, in a cupboard at the back for ages. And like, even my boyfriend, like, I haven't been in the pageant world since being with him. So like, he doesn't really truly get it.
Okay.
Whereas like, my previous boyfriends would have got it because they were around for like that chapter of my life. So I do miss that chapter, but I don't think I miss enough to do it.
Yeah.
Which is strange, because every time I go to competition, everyone's like, are you going to be up there next year? And I'm like, no, like, sorry.
I always hear rumors and I'm like, no.
Yeah, no, like, this is the thing. It would be lovely, but I know it's not my path for me right now. It might change. I don't think it will, but you know.
With starting your social media, like your YouTube career and your social media journey, has it been really tough to like transition, especially when it comes to trolling, when you've done something that's different, and especially if you're the different girl at school?
Yeah. I think the thing is, I didn't actually get trolled about pageants at all.
Okay.
Which is interesting. But then I also feel like, because of when I was posting it, I was still quite new into the space. And I also feel like the trolling nowadays is so much worse than it used to be. Like, OG YouTube was delightful in comparison to, you know, like what the likes of TikTok are like now. So I remember getting comments, but it was more about the way that I looked, and I at the time was confident in how I looked, so I didn't care. Like, it literally was water off a duck's back. I definitely think doing the pageants hand in hand, being the weird one at school, going to an all-girls school, like, I think it made me a lot tougher and it made me not care so much. And maybe that's why the hate at that point didn't really affect me, because I was like, oh, it's fine, it's just life, you know. I got picked on at school, or people didn't like me at school, I got over it. And I think that's kind of how I saw it at the time with social media as well.
How do you deal with it now then, if it's like transition and changed?
I've definitely had my moments in the past, you know, like 4 years, going through such a big life change myself with losing my dad. Coming out of that has made me a lot stronger of a person. But during it, I was a broken person, like, as you would be. And that kind of went hand in hand with COVID timings, and everyone was savage during COVID timings, and it felt kind of like you couldn't do anything right at that time in social media, because obviously people had a lot more time, so they were paying a lot more attention. And I know that my life didn't make much sense at that time, because I've always been an open book. I've always been telling people what I'm doing every day, where I'm going, yada yada yada. And I know that my life didn't make sense because I never said that my dad was unwell. So I feel like people were piecing together my life and piecing together me as a person and like getting a completely different person. And I couldn't understand that and I couldn't accept that because I was so low in myself. So it was like, I've always realized now that if I am confident and strong in who I am, anything that anyone has to say about me, I don't care. But people are always going to have those little like niggles of those things that like hit a nerve. Like you'll even have it where like someone, 100 people could make a comment, but one comment would stand out to you. And I wouldn't say it's like that anymore, but that's also because I've had the reminder of like life is too short to actually care about what people think. And it's that whole thing of like, it's just a reflection of them, not of you. But that's much easier said now.
Yeah.
Then, like there was definitely a point where I was literally like, I'm ready to walk away from all of this. Like I couldn't cope with my personal life falling apart and my work life falling apart. And I am grateful that I've gone on that journey because I learned a lot about myself. I also learned a lot about social media and I also learned not to rely my self-worth on how many likes I get, how a piece of content does. Like I very much see things differently now and I don't see it as a reflection of my person. I see it as a reflection of my job.
Yeah. Do you think doing content with your mum back in the day made it a little bit easier to like?
Yeah, definitely. Everyone loves a bit of Mama Grimes. They still do. Like she's just an absolute personality. So I think having her along for the ride definitely helped.
Does she still do social media content?
No. So she kind of took a step back after everything with my dad. I actually thought that she would like, it would push her more into it as like a like nice distraction. But I feel like it's different when you're married and you know, you're in this loving relationship. It doesn't seem as daunting posting yourself online because you know that you're so secure. But I think for her now, it's just, it all feels a little bit too raw and a little bit too like exposed. But don't get me wrong. She still loves featuring in my content, but we do live like 3 hours apart. So it's slightly more difficult. I know it sucks. But yeah, so she doesn't mind getting involved with mine, but I just know for her, I think that chapter has closed, maybe a bit like me with pageants. Like, of course, part of her still loves it, but she's just not ready to open that door.
I mean, you started your career at such a young age, at 18. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I think back to 10 years ago when I was 18, like I made so many stupid mistakes. I was so lucky that they weren't online. Like they're not available for me to look back at or for somebody else to find later down the line. And I can't even imagine what that must be like if you've ever made a mistake online and it just is always there.
I think I was lucky because I did pageants. So I was always incredibly PG, incredibly
social media, squeaky clean.
The social media was giving squeaky clean. Like there was no evidence of me going to house parties at 16, you know, like that didn't really exist. So I'm grateful for that because like my parents didn't let me have Facebook until I was like 15, you know, like I never had Twitter. So I kind of went into it like very innocent. Yeah. And I always was innocent anyway. Like I still think I probably am. So yeah, I was grateful that I had a relatively squeaky clean past. So I felt like going into it, it was like a fresh slate. And because of the pageants, I didn't post anything like that controversial or, you know, it kind of kept me in check at the time, which I'm glad because who knows what 18-year-old Misha would have posted otherwise.
There was one particular judge, wasn't there, who used to go through everyone's social media. And like you'd sit at the interview and he would have everything that he's written about your social media right in front of him. So you would be absolutely terrified to even like post a photo of you at 17 with a glass of wine in your hand because he would know about it. And you're just like, okay.
So I do remember at one point when I was a queen, I posted a photo and I got asked to remove it.
Yeah.
Naughty gal.
So the
top was a bit too low cut and I was like 17 at the time. But the thing is, back then I would have been like, oh, but I get it and I don't get it. Mm. Like I get it because younger girls are looking at you, but also there's nothing wrong with you doing it. But then I also think at the time when I was 17, I thought I was so grown up. Yeah. So I thought wearing a low cut top is like fine. Whereas now I think back to 17-year-old me in a low cut top and I'm like, oh, I see it so differently now.
Yeah.
Because I'm more grown up. But at the time I thought I was really grown up.
It is really weird. Sometimes when I look at young, when I sit and judge other pageants as well, when I look at girls that are like not, they're trying to be older than they are, it upsets me. And I think that she maybe like, it's a really good way of keeping girls like behaving their age.
Yeah. And this thing, but I think we all went through a stage where we wanted to be older.
Oh,
I had an older sister, so I was always pushing to basically be her age. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, bless my soul. I wish I'd just acted my age at the time.
Yeah, honestly, I never understood why adults would be like, one day you're going to... And I'm like, oh, shut up. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, you were so... I would never admit that they're right, but they were so right.
I say this to my mum about, like, when we used to go out to parties, and she would always say, like, I don't mind you going, I just don't want you coming back to my house because I won't sleep at night knowing you're coming back to my house. She was like, go and stay at your friend's. I never got it. Oh, my God, I get it now. When my boyfriend goes out, I'm like, can you go and stay at the boys? I'm like, I can't deal with you getting in at 4 a.m. I worry. I'm just a worrier, like, always. He could literally just be on the tube and I'll be like, nope, he's dead.
I can't relate because it's just me and my dog, so.
Well, that's fine. It's easier that
but
way.
But there's always like, I mean, there's always a big criticism about being on social media and being a content creator and then doing pageants as well, that there's always going to be negative impacts on your own body image. Uh-huh. I mean, you've said that you at the time you were super confident, but I remember, like, I mean, I've been on your social media and following you for yonks. So I remember there was like periods where you were talking about struggling with your own body image, mm-hmm. and struggling with like food and exercise, mm-hmm. and trying to regulate yourself. And I mean, how have you been able to, I don't even know how, like, can you even deal with something like that? Is it something that continues ongoing for the rest of your life? Especially when you're on social media.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always someone that, like, I don't think that you necessarily ever get rid of those thoughts in your head. You just get a lot better at ignoring them. And, like, when I think about now how I am in comparison to how I used to be, I am the best I've ever been. You know, I think about back when I used to, every single mirror I walked past, I would have to check, body check and stuff like that. I literally will go a whole day without even looking in the mirror. And I don't even realise now. And then I'll go, I haven't even looked in the mirror today. And it's like, that's an achievement. I do think that I maybe always lent myself to like going down a bit of a path with like an eating disorder. And it's always that like gray area of like, I'm sad that it did at some points coincide with when I was competing with pageants, because it didn't have anything to do with them. It was all to do with me. And I know that like, I would have got myself in that position anyway. But I just got so in my own head. And like, it's funny because I say I was really confident, but I was confident because I felt so small. And then reality, you know, struck and I realized that like, you can't stay like this forever. And then I kind of, you know, grew in social media, suddenly had this completely different lifestyle than I had before, because my life was pageant. So I spent my weekends rehearsing, you know, training, you know, doing this charity work, that charity work. And then suddenly I was in social media and I could, you know, go out on a Tuesday and, you know, get invited to all these dinners and go for all these drinks. And I definitely kind of went from like 0 to 100, because it was like, without even realizing, I'd been restricting myself and not living a normal 18, 19 year old's life. But that was like my personal choice. That was just the headspace I was in at the time. And then suddenly I'm doing literally everything because I feel like I've got to make up for lost time.
Yeah.
So I feel like in about 2 or 3 years, I went from one extreme to the other. And then it's like, okay, so where do I go from here? Because I'm not happy and I can't live my life fully in either of those states. So now I feel like I found the happy medium, and like, I love to work out, but I don't work out so I can eat. You know, I don't see food. I see food as fuel. I don't see food as the enemy anymore. And I love food. I absolutely love food. So I'm glad that I've got that. I'm grateful.
What was the like turning point for you to like sit there and realize that it was an issue?
I think there's been a few turning points. I remember, and like my sister meant this in no malice, but I remember just before I moved to London for the first time, when my dad was unwell as well, I remember we were sitting down at like Christmas dinner or something, and I just couldn't eat the food. And bear in mind, this was probably only like 3 and a bit years ago. In that time when I was getting the hate online, when my life was falling apart, it was almost like, it's the crutch, like controlling your eating was the thing that like kept you together.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, well, if everything else in my world is falling apart, at least I look good.
Yeah.
That's what I had in my head, because I was in such a toxic mindset. And I remember my sister made like some passing comment about how like, I'm acting how I used to act. And she probably doesn't realize, but that comment was the comment that like stuck in my head. I was like, oh God, I've got myself back down this road. And it is very difficult when you lose someone to nourish your body, because that's the last thing you want to do. And it's not because you don't want to eat, it's because you've lost your appetite. And like, it, there are stages in life where you are going to get unwell and lose your appetite, but it's always then reminding myself that like, that's not a healthy body. Yeah. I need to get myself back to a healthy body that, you know, can do all of these challenges. And like, even when I was training for my first marathon, I gained weight, which I hadn't done in, you know, like 3 or so years. So that was quite daunting. But then I finished the race and I was like, I wouldn't have been able to do this in my previous body. Like, I needed to gain that weight to be able to have the strength to do it. So I think I see it much more as like a performance, like my body being able to perform to its best rather than the smallest version of myself.
I think people think that when people do marathons that you're a little bit crazy, because maybe it was my experience, but I became not obsessive with what I was eating, but like being so self-aware that I needed to make sure I was eating enough.
Yeah.
Or like of the right thing.
It's a completely different mindset.
Yeah.
It's like you go from like easily just forgetting to have lunch to like, no, I actually need to make sure, yeah, I've got enough carbs, I've got enough protein.
Yeah. So that was like with me, like, but then I don't know, like, did it sometimes feel like it was a bit too much? Because I felt like for me, maybe this is me, like I felt like training for a marathon was just too much, because I was being so controlling over what I was eating, or like being so too aware of what I was doing.
Okay, yeah. I think the thing is, I am someone that puts my all into everything.
Yeah.
But I also think, because I've learned from not overdoing it in the past, that like, even for the first marathon, like I did not train nearly as much as other people that I knew, like at all. And don't get me wrong, I still trained really hard.
Yeah.
But I think I've just learned to like give my body a break and like listen to my body a bit more. Maybe it's because of the turmoil I've put it through in the past that I finally started to listen to myself. But for me, it was always eating before a run. That's always been my challenge.
Yeah.
Because the minute I go out for a run, I'm like, oh God, I can literally feel that porridge or feel, cause like
you can hear it rolling around, yeah, when you're running.
So that's always been the like thing that I've had to teach myself. But I would just like slowly increase everything that I was having the morning of, because obviously you can't run a marathon on an empty stomach.
No.
You can't. So it's always something, trying to like convince myself eating in the morning is always a little bit of a challenge, but I've got a lot better at it.
What is it about running that you, because you've done how many marathons now?
2.
Okay. But you've done quite a few half marathons, haven't you?
I think I've done 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like, what is it about running that you like loved? Because some people have really like, you just either love, hate, right?
Yeah, yeah. Do you still love it or do you now hate it?
I think after the marathon, I like, when I was training, I loved it.
Okay, got you.
And then after the marathon, I think because I felt unwell,
okay,
on,
yeah,
the race day.
Okay, yeah.
I was like, I hate it. And also I lost so many toenails, which nobody tells you about.
No, I've lost 4 toenails this year.
Yeah, so did I.
My big toes.
Okay, I didn't lose my big toes.
My 2 big toes.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, they came off. They came off in a club on holiday. It was really bad. We walked outside, me and Mo walked outside and we looked down and I was missing a whole toenail.
To be fair, it's not as painful as I thought it was going to be.
No, sorry. Why is it nicer not having toenails?
Okay, you're on your own with this one.
Chloe texts me this all the time. She's like, your feet don't hurt. They don't rub.
Actually,
like,
Chloe, does Chloe have toenails?
And Chloe's missing loads of toenails. She runs way more than any of us. So yeah. They're clinging on.
I thought it'd be really painful, but it actually wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
But the person that does my pedicure or every time would be like, dancing too much, going clubbing too much. I went, bloody wish.
Yeah, absolutely not.
It was absolutely disgusting.
Our feet do get knackered.
But like some people absolutely hate running because of stuff like that.
Yeah, and I do get it. I think because I started running again whilst Ab was unwell,
yeah,
it was like my escape.
Yeah.
So I will always see it as, I'm so grateful to be able to run because, yeah, he couldn't walk, he couldn't do this, he couldn't do that. So I'm like, okay, on the days where I'm like, oh, I can't bother to get out of the house, I can't bother to go for a run, there's always that little bit inside of me that's like, no, you are grateful for the body that you've got.
Yeah.
Use it. So I always felt like, even though he never ran, it feels like my link to him.
Yeah.
So if I'm ever feeling like overwhelmed or, you know, anxious or thinking about him, I'll go on a run and it just helps me so much.
Yeah, I think maybe that's a good way of explaining it to people, because I always feel, I feel terrible when I'm starting, but like when I finished it, I feel so good.
It's the runner's high.
Yeah.
Like it does make sense.
And then I never realized how much I loved it until I got injured and I couldn't do it at all. And then you were like, okay, well, I'm so lucky I get to, not, yeah, I have to.
Yeah. And I also think like not always pushing for like a race is also important. I was having this conversation with someone yesterday and I was like, I did my marathon back in May, but like I didn't really train properly for it because me and Jake were away, yada, yada, yada. And like I haven't like PB'd or anything or done anything really, anything that crazy with running the rest of the year, but I've kept it up.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm running for me rather than I'm running to prove a point or to get a PB. And I feel like not always running for a time, running for you and like your mental space also helps like make you consistent.
I think I was really hard on myself when I did the London Marathon for not getting the time I wanted.
Yeah, which I feel like a lot of people do.
Yeah, but then like so many people.
But you ran
like,
a marathon.
Yeah.
Like,
and it doesn't matter. Like I finished it. And I think actually I got trolled for my marathon time, which is the weirdest thing.
I bet all the trolls had never even run a marathon.
Well, this is the thing. Like how many people actually do run a marathon?
It's like 1% or something
like
that.
Yeah. And like these are, I mean, I'm not going to say too much about them, but like, I remember being trolled for it. And I remember like being like, oh, I'm so angry with myself because I trained so hard for this and I didn't get the time I wanted. But then it's like, I forget that what I've just put my body through and how amazing it is I've just been able to do something like that.
Yeah. And also if someone said, if you said to someone, oh, I've run a marathon, they're not going to go, what time? Who asked that? No one asked that unless you're around like sporty people.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, no one's going to ask that. Like,
no, that is true. I've never actually thought
about
that.
People only are impressed that you run a marathon. They're not like, oh, did you do it in sub six, sub four, sub three? No one cares.
My parents thought I was absolutely insane for wanting to do it.
Yeah. My uncle did them. So I feel like, although my mum hates the fact that I run.
Why?
She loves it and she hates it. She's like, your knees.
Oh yeah,
she's
that.
Like, you're gonna fit. And I'm like, no, mummy, if I wear the right trainers and I have the right form, my knees will be absolutely fine.
Oh, I was like taped up to the hill.
Yeah, to be fair, my first time, injury after injury, but now okay. I think my body's kind of like got into the swing of it. So she has to get me a little bit less. But if I tell her I'm going on like a 15K, she's like, oh, Misha. I'm like, calm down, mum. It's fine.
I can actually imagine your mum saying that. Yeah. So. But you do a lot. You do, even when you run now, you do running clubs and go with running groups, don't you?
Somewhat. Yeah. I've done two run club events myself, one raising money for Major Neurone Disease and then one with Gymshark. And then I've gone to like the occasional running club, you know, just to meet some people, like-minded people that like to run.
So I remember actually when you were at some point when you were talking about body image online that you had people ask you about fillers and whether you were going to get filler. Do you remember this? Lip filler. You talked about it on YouTube about how you were never going to get it.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you still feel the same way about it. Because obviously when you're in social media, like back in the day, I always sat there and go, I will never get that stuff.
Okay, got you.
And then when you go through certain changes and you're like people taking photos of you and stuff and you're like, shit, like, now looking at all the things that you were never aware of. And then if people are on social media picking stuff out at you that you never thought of.
To be fair, I'm still not there. I still don't want anything. Not because there's things that I wouldn't, you know, fix about my face or change about my face. But I think I've gone on such a journey to like love who I am.
Yeah.
That not saying that people get fillers and stuff like that don't love who they are, because I'm the first person to be like, if something's literally really affecting you and affecting your confidence and you have the power to change it, go for it. So I definitely don't see it as black and white as I used to. But I think that's when you're younger, you see everything so black and white and then you grow up and you're like, oh my God, there's so much more to it. But so I know that like when I'm older, like, you know, when I'm in my 30s, maybe I'll get some Botox. Maybe I'll get some fillers, you know, when I'm older. But for now, I'm pretty happy in my own skin. And like, I want to kind of force myself to be like that.
Yeah.
But I think that's just because I also, the past year went on such a journey with my eczema and like being okay with like not wearing much makeup and stuff like that. So I feel like the past year I've really honed in on loving myself. So now it's like, okay, well, I'm comfortable in where I am for the moment. So I'm going to stick with it.
I feel like a complete stalker for remembering what you said and not you remembering what you said.
I have said so much in so many videos. So
I think it was that you said that you'd had such young following that you didn't want them to feel pressured into getting stuff done.
Which I do get to a degree, but I also think now that my following has grown up, I see that it's not like that. But at one stage, I would have had like a 15-year-old following.
Yeah.
And I would have felt like it's one of those things that if you don't talk about it, it's wrong because then you're hiding it from people. If you do talk about it, then you're promoting it to people. So then it's like, where is there another option? So I feel like that's why I've just never really gone down that road because I'm just...
you can't win.
You can't win.
Okay. Yeah, that was what I was going to ask. No, I literally look like a stalker now.
Oh, no, don't be silly. Like, I feel like I kind of remember what video you're talking about. Like, I can picture where I was sat, But
yeah, in your bedroom.
Yeah, probably, in my old bedroom with the shelves behind me.
Yeah.
But I can't picture, like, I can't remember those words coming out of my mouth.
I sound like such a stalker.
No, never.
It's all right. I sound like a stalker to everyone anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Why is it important for you to be able to, like, fundraise? Because obviously I know that you've lost your dad through motor neuron disease, but like, why was it important that you fundraise for the MND Association?
So, I mean, people might not know much about MND. I didn't before my dad, but it's one of those things that, like, you're given the diagnosis and there's kind of nothing they can do about it. There's no medicines, there's no nothing. And I know that we relied on the charity when my dad was going through it, and I know how much of a help they were to me. And that is like 2% of what they do. And it's kind of like that whole thing of like continuing a legacy. And like, it's crazy when we go to the events now, like, of course I want to fundraise and I want to help raise the money, because, you know, all of that is going to be life-changing for other people, so they don't have to go through what I went through. But whenever I come to an event or I post about them, they're mostly grateful for me just posting, which every time melts my heart, because it's that whole thing of it's opening up the conversation, you know, it's getting out there, because that is one of their like pillars, is letting people know what motor neuron disease is, because most people wouldn't know it unless they know someone that's gone through it, or, you know, they've seen it in, you know, it's been a lot more in the press recently, which is obviously really sad, but it's also great that, you know, it's getting that highlight, because the minute it does, it means it's going to get more fundraising. So I feel like now, that is going to be something that I'm going to take with me for the rest of my life. Like, I will always be working closely with them. I feel like I've made that bond now, especially with the people that work there. Like, most people that work there have experienced motor neuron disease. So I feel like they're like I'm like soul connected to them, because we've gone through the same experience. So it's like, I could never wave goodbye to that. I always feel like I need that. It's another link to dad. It's, and don't get me wrong, like, it's very difficult, especially when they do events and, you know, there's people that are suffering with motor neuron disease. It's like a constant reminder of like, that was your dad, but it's worth it. Like, I would rather put myself through that, you know, bit of turmoil if I could make a difference and I can stop somebody else having to go through what I went through.
It's because this is the thing with being a content creator, when something bad, or like, you know, when you're going through a difficult time, it's really hard to know what to put out on social media and what to keep.
Yeah.
Personally for yourself. And, you know, as someone who followed you, I actually didn't know about your dad until like closer towards the end.
Yeah.
And that must have been a really difficult conversation or decision to make when you post about it, when you talk about it.
Yeah, it definitely was. My dad was a very private guy. Like, you will find hardly any clips of him online. There are a few like YouTube videos or clips of him, which I absolutely love and will cherish those. But he kind of didn't even like necessarily share it that much in his own life. So it wasn't my mind to put on the internet. And it was like, I am more someone that would not go through something and come out the other end, because I don't think you ever do, but I would rather be further into it and understand it more and speak on it and be able to help people, rather than just me like hysterically crying, because that's all I did for, you know, a year. And also social media at that time was then like my like outlet of like not having to, you know, every time I filmed a video, that would be half an hour I didn't have to think about what was going on. And then coming online with it, it was like me and mum always knew that it was going to have to happen. And we always would discuss how we hoped that day would never happen.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have that little bit of hope that it's never gonna, you know, come to fruition. But when it did, we both knew that we wanted to sit and talk about it and talk about him and kind of bear every detail. Not obviously completely, there are still so many things that people won't know or understand necessarily that we went through as a family. But it was actually, it felt like a weight lifted off my shoulder in a weird way, because I felt like I had this big secret and this big thing that was like pulling me down. And then for everyone to kind of understand why I've been so, you know, all over the place for those 2 years, it was kind of like, although, you know, my world's been ripped apart, people understand me now.
Yeah.
And they understand how I've got here. And I could sit and talk about my dad all day, every day. Like, even like my boyfriend, you know, Jake's so used to it. Molly's so used to it. Molly's never even met my dad. And we constantly make jokes and talk about him. Like, I just think I constantly want to keep talking about him. So then that also transcends into online speaking about him. And then every time I do, the response that people have, like even we went to an event the other day and this lady came up to me who was a GP and she was like, I just want to say, like, I absolutely love how you speak about your journey with grief online. And I'm like, whoa, like you never think about this lady who's a GP who's like telling her, you know, like people that come in for their appointments about me. Like, you don't necessarily think about how far your reach has because you think you're in this bubble and you're in this pond. And then you realize how big the pond is. And then it's like, whoa, okay. So not only is it therapeutic for me to talk about how I feel, but it helps other people. So why would I not do both of them?
I think one of the beautiful things about social media is that sometimes if you feel like you're going through something on your own, mm-hmm. or that there's people around you that don't necessarily have any experience or will never be able to understand what you're going through, you can always find like your tribe online or someone who's gone through or going through what you're experiencing. And like to be able to know that you're not alone and find some relatability with somebody is really important. And obviously losing a loved one is really, really difficult when it's a parent at a young age.
Yeah.
I can't even begin to imagine what the grief is like. So how do you deal with like the grief when you were going through, like when you'd lost your dad?
To be fair, I think my sister was the one, again, wow, Anya never really gets that much of a feature. She's obviously had a lot more of an impact on me than we both realise. It's that whole thing of like the stages of grief and you go through so many different levels. And, you know, when it first happened, my mum was so angry. Mm. And I remember just sitting her down and being like, Mum, I get it, but we can't be angry. So I remember my sister's way of dealing with it was, we're so lucky that we got him for as many years as we did. And again, I took that. The minute she said that, I was like, okay, that's my purpose. That's my why. You know, that's the thing that, although I may have only got him for 22 years of my life, I got him for 22 years and I wouldn't switch him for anybody else. So it's like, yeah, it might have been a shorter period, but the impact he's had on me is worth all of it. And like, if I could do this life all over again, of course I'd like him to stick around for longer. And I always say to my mum, I'm like, I actually blame you guys for meeting later in life because if you'd had us sooner, I would have had more years with him, but I wouldn't change any of it because, you know, I got the family that I did and I'm very grateful. And like, even to this day, like I see videos of people like posting with their dad. I love it. I love to see those relationships. People would probably think like, I find it really upsetting. I think that's so special. And I'm so grateful that people get to have those relationships because I also know that not everyone does get that lucky, whether it's through losing a parent or someone not being around or, you know, difficult relationships. Like, families are complicated and I'm okay with the complications that I've got because I know how special they all are. And I know that although I didn't have him forever, I was grateful for the time that I got him.
What advice would you give to somebody who's potentially going through like the loss of a parent and is like trying to figure out how to like get closer to going through the other end? Because you seem so comfortable and confident talking about it.
I think this is the thing. I think I've like normalized in myself talking about it, but then like I'll be randomly watching a film and someone's dad will mention in it. And then that's when it will catch me off guard and I'll get upset. Advice is so difficult because grief is so different for everyone. And you meet some people that like can't talk about the parent that they've lost, or someone that's like me and really wants to talk about it. And there's no like right way of dealing with things. I always almost have advice for people around them.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you can't necessarily give people advice when they're in it, because also like it's like you've potentially got to feel all your feels and go through all of that journey. But also some people might, you know, cope better by shutting it out and then dealing with it like later down the line. And you kind of can't tell people how and when and where. Because I also think the way in which someone's lost someone also plays a massive part. Like, I lost my dad slowly, whereas losing someone suddenly, you react so differently. But the top DM I probably get is, how do I support my friend who is going through this? And my top advice is always, when it first happens, everyone is there for them. Everyone is there for you. You get, and bless, people mean so well, but you get the same texts, the same messages for like a week. And it's down the line that it hits you and you almost feel like everyone's moved on with their life and they've forgotten. And it's those people that continue to check in with you months down the line, years down the line, those are the people that make you feel like, okay, those are my people, you know, I feel safe with them, they remember. And I feel like those are the bits that like mean the most, because it is crazy when everything first happens, how everyone is there. And then it almost makes it more obvious when everyone's not there, yeah. because it's like you've gone from 0 to 100. But I'm very lucky that I have had people in my life that have still been there, you know, even when it's not at the forefront of everyone's mind. So that's always my advice to friends. Like, don't just do the here and now, do the down the line.
Yeah, because I guess it's, well, I've lost all my grandparents and like, so it's not the same, but.
No, but I get it, because loss is, you know.
And it's like in the beginning, it's completely numb and you probably don't think it's real.
Yeah.
Or like that it's actually happened. But obviously eventually you'll have to like accept it. And I think it's when you start accepting.
Is when you actually need the support of other people. Yeah.
And also like, you don't want to sit on your phone and text people and talk to people in that this first,
this is the thing.
Like,
there is going to be so many people that I didn't reply to. And at first I felt really bad. And I was like, no, because it's not going to help me. Like sitting there and replying to people right now is not going to help me. So I get that everyone means the absolute world and I'm grateful for it. But it was like later down the line, I ended up replying to people because I just couldn't face it at that point.
Yeah. I think when I always say to people when they're going through like grief, it's like, when you're ready to talk, I'm here. And then you kind of just have to like let them get to that point where they're ready. How do you feel like the loss of your dad has helped shape your like your content and your outlook on life and how you work now?
I'm a completely different person. Like I am a completely different person. During the time of my relationship, I wouldn't even recognize who Jake first got with. Like it's crazy. And that's the whole thing of like, I am grateful that it's made me the person that I am, although I'd love to change it. I'm the first to say like, I had a very privileged upbringing. I had a pretty handy dandy life. You know, I didn't get mental health. I didn't, you know, I was so unaware of the world because I wouldn't even say my parents wrapped me in cotton wool, but I just think it goes back to that naivety and that innocence that I had. So then like your whole world rocking and everything kind of falling apart at once, you do hit rock bottom. And I remember sitting in therapy and saying, I just want to be happy like I was. Like it, by this point, it'd maybe been like 8 months since my dad passed away. And you almost think like, why am I not happy now? Like, why am I not okay? But it wasn't just losing my dad. It was that I couldn't see my life for what it was. I could only see it in like a negative way. And arguably, I actually think it was worse before my dad passed away, because you're waiting for the inevitable.
Yeah.
Rather than once the inevitable has happened, it's like, okay, you've got to, you know, you've now got to step up. So I remember being in like one of my first therapy appointments and turning to her and being like, I just want to be happy like I used to be. And I couldn't understand how I couldn't get that person back. And she was like, Misha, you're not that person anymore. Like I want you to stop striving to be the person that you were, because you've gone through so much and you're so much stronger than you were then. That like, it's not the same. So I feel like now I can't believe I've got to the place that I have. And now I think back to when I had, you know, that therapy session, it was probably only like 2 or so years ago. And I don't want to be the person that I used to be, because that person was unaware of the world. You know, they didn't necessarily understand people's feelings fully. They didn't understand, you know, mental health issues. They hadn't gone through that hardship. So I'm no longer striving to be the person that I used to be. I'm now grateful that I'm the person that I am, because I am so much more aware of the world and I feel like I do have a purpose. And there is so many people in social media, so it's so hard to get like lost in it. But now I feel like I have my pillars. And I remember we used to go to meetings and they'd say like, what are your three pillars? And it'd be like, oh, beauty and this and that. And I never really knew where I fit in. And I still wouldn't say that I have, you know, like a zone that I am. I think I'm a bit of everything, but I know that, you know, talking about grief and dealing with the loss of my dad, I know that that will always be my pillar and that will be the thing that always grounds me. And that'll be the thing that I think always connects me to other people. So it has changed my entire world. It's changed my entire outlook on life, but it's made me such a better person for it. So I am grateful.
I think saying like, I think admitting that you probably had like a very comfortable upbringing mm-hmm. and you were very sheltered from things is quite a brave thing to admit.
Yeah.
Especially when you know that it's not just your friends that you're admitting it to.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. Like, I feel like so many people, and I definitely wasn't aware of my privilege. So now stepping out of it, I'm so aware of my privilege. I do feel like I almost need to shout about that, because I did have that. Like, I managed to start YouTube because I didn't have to worry about, you know, getting a full-time job because my parents, you know, could let me stay in the house and stuff like that. So I am aware that it's kind of got me to a level. And then I almost feel like with everything that happened, it like took me back down to the start, and I've almost like rebuilt on what I previously had, but with different building blocks that mean a lot more to me and hopefully mean a lot more to other people.
Did you feel like you ever had to grieve your old self?
I feel like I don't remember her anymore. It's really weird. I feel like that time almost feels like a blur.
Yeah.
Like it never happened. And I think that does coincide with it being COVID and people, you know, like just living completely different lives than they did. But it almost feels like I went into COVID as one person and I came out a completely different person. And now I can remember all those different stages, but maybe even for like my own headspace, I try not to let myself think back to how I was in between, because I don't want it to ever drag me down. Not that I think it will. But yeah, I don't think I ever actually have. I think maybe I'm protecting myself by not doing that and like not recognizing my previous self. And maybe I do need to do that at some point. But like even with like body image, I remember that I used to not be able to look back at old photos of me because I used to wish that I'd look like that. Whereas now I don't see it like that in the slightest. I can look back at everything and I'm like, bless me, I was going through it and I didn't realize at the time. Like, yeah. I thought I was so confident. I thought I was so happy, but the damage I was doing. So I feel like now I'm much better at reflecting on that section of my life. And maybe down the line, I'll be better at reflecting on, you know, the lowest section of my life. But just grateful to be here and be smiling.
Do you know what I always say to like friends and stuff when they always look at back old photos and go, I wish I had this.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, well, I think you look happy now. Mm-hmm. I never say like, oh, you look skinnier or you look taller mm-hmm. or you look, mm-hmm. I always say you look happier. And yeah. I think that that's like the best compliment ever.
Yeah,
to give
I agree.
Anyone.
I also think you just radiate it. Like,
yeah.
You know, it makes such a difference. And people don't remember people for the way that they looked. No one's got on their tombstone, you were beautiful, you were fit, you know, you were sexy, you had a six pack.
I mean, give it a time before my friends write on mine.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? But people care about the effect that you have on them. And yeah. I feel like that's what this whole situation taught me, because it was like, I'm not thinking about my dad and, you know, how many times he worked out in the gym. I'm thinking about the impact that he had on my life.
Yeah, that's very true. I always ask all of my guests the same final question. So if you could give younger Misha a piece of advice based on your life and career journey so far, what would it be and why?
I always felt like the younger questions are hard because I'm glad that I had that innocence and that I was unaware, because it's better to almost not be prepared. I think I would genuinely just say like, keep doing you, because I feel like younger me was onto something. She believed in herself. She was confident. And I almost feel like you go through a stage in life where that almost gets like bashed out of you as you grow up. And like, I think back to like year 7 me on like, you know, like the days where you used to get to wear your own clothes and I would dress so extra. And I remember people being like, oh my God, she's so weird. And eventually I started to, you know, change how I dressed and, you know, and now I feel like I've come back 360. So it's almost like, don't let society bash you down. Stay being the little weirdo that you are.
I mean, it takes a hell of a lot of confidence to walk into a room full of people that you've never met before and be like, I made my outfit and I'm going to tell everyone that I made my outfit. And I remember sitting there being like, that is so extra. And I can't believe that she made this.
Yeah, that sums me up pretty much.
But no, honestly, thank you so much for coming and being completely honest. And I know that like a lot of the times when I have people here, I do get talked to them about really difficult topics.
Yeah.
And I know that it's difficult to do it, especially when there's cameras around. But
yeah, but to be honest, I don't even see them. I just feel like I'm chatting to you, so it's fine.
To be fair, also, you've done YouTube for that long. It's probably just normal life now, isn't
it? I get the blur through my eyes. I don't think I can even see them.
No, thank you.
Thank you for having me.